Hello, this is your host, Linda Latona. Welcome to the last podcast of the year. This time, the poems will be arranged according to the individual score given to it by the Poetry Slam judges, starting from the highest individual score. The poems will run back-to-back, without interruption, for 15 minutes. See the caps to read the order of poems and poets' names. To listen to our featured reader's short story and our sacrificial poet, open the next podcast located right below this one. Thanks for joining us.
I can still see them sinking. Three little sets of little footprints strewn about the sand in circles, following me, adoring me, hanging on my every joke and laugh and rhyme, learning, watching, listening, growing, sharing more than just a bloodline. Tugging me every which way with dirty little palms and the innocence of a baby's gummy smile. They love me, no questions asked. No auditions necessary. They just love who they follow, and they trust I'm here to carry them away from anything they may fear or find scary. So we only have time to play. And it's the same skinny, plastic, hollow, golden rod I used to clear the neighbor's fences with before I ever had a job, or became a bump on the log that is the cold, unforgiving, competitive, busy, real, real world. Oh, to be young, when my worries held no weight, when I believed what I saw and heard, when I had time for freeze tag, and I was safe as long as I escaped the chase, taking sanctuary in the temple, simply named base. Me and the three little ones go barefoot, wholehearted, never empty-handed, and sometimes piggybacked. We make up the rules as we go, laugh when it's funny, and we never mention politics, gas, consequence, natural resource holy wars, generic terrorist templates, freedom, heartbreak, death, genocide, history, the war on heart disease, future, global warming, good carbs, bad carbs, trans fats, Paris Hilton, reality TV, inflation, Hillary, Rudy, or Jesus camps. We talk wiffle ball and The Simpsons. And when we don't circle the bases, we call a ghost off the bench to run in our places so as to not interrupt the flow of the important things. And when I can't get a good enough grip, I choke up. Although it never seems long enough, I know, they know, I've always got time and a lap to perch upon, a hand to squeeze during Jeepers Creepers, covers to share, shoulders to climb, presents to give, and enough imagination to play along. And while they grow and harden, while the sparkle in their eyes mutates into stressed out, pulsating ticking over an equation, or a job, or an argument, or a boy, I'll be old, but I'll hold out my wingspan like a big man for them to pop into place, and we'll color outside the lines, or go to carnivals, or just remember things out loud. And when they call my name, I'll anchor my obligations, send a ghost in my place, because I need time to finally walk the bases. Thank you.
America and its troubled relationship with the vagina. Before I commence, let me warn the audience that this is not a vagina manifesto whereby the female poet promotes or asks you in any way, such as with mythology goddess allusions, to worship or acknowledge her vagina. No, this is rather a request from your frustrated poetess to please, pretty, please, stop your American obsession with the vagina, and specifically celebrity vagina, which has hijacked what used to be known as journalism, has replaced spam email, and furthermore corrupted the American youth. I long for the return of spam email, with innocuous headlines reading, erectile dysfunction, take our magic pill, and naughty college girl playing with roommate in jelly pool. Instead, I am now spiritually violated with headlines reading Britney Spears vajayjay. And because I'm not entirely sure what that means, but since everyone is concerned about Miss Spears these days and CNN thinks it incumbent to make it a topic of discussion, I click my mouse unconsciously and lo and behold, there is a strange maximized image of what looks like a deformed goblin with intricate folds and bends covered in what looks like a piece of fabric that resembles a skirt. And though I've seen vaginas before, mind you, don't tell anyone, but I am the owner of one. I scream when I realize that this is indeed a vagina, but not just any vagina, it's celebrity vagina, and Americans are losing their minds over it. Don't get me wrong, I am no prude. I am all for vagina obsession. It's good for the market and for the teenage soul. But when I turned a channel to watch the rampant misery of a war gone to the very depths of Dante's Inferno's ninth circle, and instead see girls gone wild showing their body parts for 99 cent beats and cocaine-addicted actresses crashing into totem poles, I feel disenfranchised and utterly betrayed. So, America, I have a proposition to make. Let us stop the modesty parade by coming clean once and for all about our true obsessions and launch a TV channel with nothing but celebrity vagina. Call it VET, Vagina Entertainment Television. Of course, this has to be network television, not mere cable, so everyone can have access, no pun intended. We need 24-hour access to celebrity vagina. Everything specifying the shape, color, texture, size, baby delivery, plastic surgery, reconstruction, etc. All in HD TV quality to ensure the saturation of the most obsessive vagina-craving Americans who just can't get enough, just can't get enough. And in return for this dissemination of truthiness, let the sour grapes, politically concerned population, or whatever you deign to call us, have our news back. And additionally, restore the pride to those underpaid souls known as journalists, who in their attempt to seek solace from the suffocating vagina juices and discharge flowing from their respective newsrooms, have begun selling their souls to Bacchus, and are in their spare time pretending to cut their veins with plastic kitchen knives. And now, I curtsy and bow. Thank you, America. To my ex-husband. To sleep in the absence of you is strange, and stranger still is to think of the fits of rhapsody which once shook us. Now we are as old lead actors dimming in remembrance of a past glory, or rather than welcoming neon signs, there is an all-seeing eye lurking with buried secrets. The day I felt love slip from my weakened grasp, we were at your brother's wedding. The wedding party rode in a hay truck and everyone shouted with belligerent zeal. I felt like Meursault and the Stranger, ready to murder someone from the effects of the sun alone. I wanted nothing but to set foot on the ground and leave those cutouts of black tuxes and purple gowns in the insufferable red noise. You turned to me and said, "Don't be difficult." At that instant, I knew the past year had been a desperate attempt to conceal my wounds before the neighbors, in spite of the frostbite eating at my legs. So I got drunk at the wedding and attempted to steal a table centerpiece. I was laughing and tiptoeing down the hall stairs with a friend when your brother's bride appeared like a white, beaded monster and looked down at me with a burning gaze too strong and strange for the cause. She demanded the centerpiece, and I hated the smugness that constitutes a woman whose pride is entirely derived from the promise of a wedding ring. There are lost things for which I yearn, be sure. I long for the familiarity of our body's shapes at one time, or an extension of our own. I long for your mother's birthday cards addressed with the heading to my daughter. I long for the tipping angle of your head against my shoulder, our bodies huddled on the sofa before our big screen TV, which we jokingly called our perfect baby. And I pretended not to love watching Doctor Who episodes, but you knew I did. Many things went wrong, though mainly we were too young. But this, my body, which at one time you ravished eagerly, became a house to you. Tired industry, absurd theater. Bags turn against each other, and loneliness avenging its wounded pride with forbidden fantasies. Yes, I too gave birth to promises soon discarded, and I confused my role of lover with mother. But there is one promise which will never die, and on lonesome nights when I revisit our happiest days together, the ghost of love will appear before you, and if you are not afraid to welcome it, it will ring your phone and leave a footprint upon your doorstep. Call itself your most fortunate friend and share this space with its haunting view.
Suicidal confession, and it's dedicated to a child I hope to know. Son, you were once the last trace of light slipping below the great white horizon in the ocean of my eye. You were invisible, and hope was non-essential, non-elemental, as was everything else. The world turned to ashes in the hand of my Midas touch. Might as well not touch anything or anyone, because it all turned to dust on my finger, my eyelash, my earlobe, and yellow earwax. I was a wreck and felt helpless. And son, the first time I tried it was with a shotgun. Two black cylinders looking like death, one trigger shaped like a bass clef, one finger wholly stretched, but it was too far or too hard to reach. Son, before you cried at my funeral, Before you slept in my arms and I lulled you into dreams of endless summers and infinite childhoods, I was raised and lived like a good soldier, asked to live and die for complacency, the American dream, or middle-class demeanors, or hopes of welfare, or politicians who don't really care, or MTV, or lines at the DMV, or the beauty of nothing because it was all I had or all I cared to see. The second time I tried, I cut open my side like a samurai at a ceremonial Mayan sacrifice, whose religion I didn't believe in, because I believed in none. But I followed blind, deaf, and dumb into martyrdom because the order of the orders and the borders of the universe told me to seek God. And on the way to the hospital, under the fluorescent faunal lights, that white light that everyone talks about, it exists, but within you. Son, that day I met God, and we, she and I, stood on her balcony looking out onto everything. And she said, "See that? That's right. It's all mine." And I stared at her infinitely green front yard and searched the myriad of fruit trees for that one bad apple I was told belonged to every family. God said, "You will not find flaws in my design." So I searched the side alleys behind and below her balcony, searched for cracks in the foundation. "You will not find flaws in my design," God said. Well, why then? Why then is there hate, disease, misunderstandings, terrorists, bombings, bullies, guns, greed, drugs, hunger, pain, rain, snow, tears, fears, politicians, police, priests, big government, small government, bad government, all government, war, fascists, Americans, Iranians, Egyptians, Rwandans, why other nations at all? Why does gravity let us fall? Why are we all so small? Why do our voices stall on the wind? Why is there death, and when will it end? Son, that day I met God, she said, "It's all holy. Even the holes are holy. Even the stench is holy. Even the hurt, holy. It's in you too. There are no flaws in my design." And I woke up slightly etherized under the bright white light of a sterilized hospital room. But I was happy to be alive, and you should be too.
I need somebody to explain what erupted underneath that precious, wholesome breadbasket. The quake rippled crust, screaming shockwaves spit some venom through the dust, melted logic from their brains, and oozing out from their mouths drips this vicious, viscous, violent word of God. Once pioneers for civil rights, those little light bulb ideas haven't flickered since. Now they want to murder the science in Kansas, in cold blood no less, starting with biology, psychology, genetics, astronomy, medicine, mathematics, and anything else that would dare tread upon the holy page. Me? I just can't make that leap of faith. I can't sacrifice my reason. Being spiritual these days is about the things you don't believe in, but hate? Oh, they make such haste to spread the judgment of their judge, whispering the truth from up above us. These aren't the pure intentions of a Coltrane. No way. These are pickets at a funeral procession with no shame. You show me an all-loving, all-knowing, ever-present, racist, sexist, homophobe, and I'll show you someone that no one knows. Show me a room full of faithful, fearless fanatics ready to die for ideas they couldn't possibly unravel. I'll show you several other henchmen in other lands ready to do battle for a different, invisible, intolerable, yet infallible higher power, like the ones who felled the towers. I see the country shaking, startled in the epicenter, slowly spreading the idea that bloodshed will make their efforts better blessed from the silent, scornful invention of their heads. And on what day are they going to give this shit a rest? Kansas, Phelps is slowly bleeding your conscience. What kind of prophet profits with dollars to spend them up there where God lives? So go, rub your crucifix charm that rests next to your little flag lapel, and pray to your creator not to let the fags rebel.
This is not a poem about love. It will not make you want to go out and vote, do laundry, or eat M&Ms. It will not give you a headache, a cup of coffee, or an orgasm. It will not speak to you in liquid trills, runs, and fills as you drift off to sleep, or talk about blood-red sunsets or dreams melting in the rain. This poem does not inhabit graveyards to hold conversations with the dead. When the wind blows, it blows right through this poem. This poem doesn't mind. It's kind of laid back like that. It does not mention Spanish lullabies, Spanish speakers, or Cinco de Mayo. It wouldn't have dreamed of putting a cow nor pudding in this picture. This poem will not discuss Walmart or Poland. It does not mention Frida Kahlo, Carmen Miranda, Jesus, or Lewis and Clark. It will not wipe your tears away, comb your hair, or balance your checkbook. It is safe for all ages and flame retardant. It has never heard of Neutral Milk Hotel or Kerouac. What this poem will do is wave calmly goodbye as violins play, snow falls softly, and you walk away, tightly clutching the porcelain shards of what looked like a strangely durable heart.